and welcome to the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, brought to you by Nestle & Associates. Nestle & Associates is an ERP organizational change management firm serving the private equity industry. Hello, my name is Jonathan Donald, the founder of Invert Ventures, a change strategy firm. And today I'm co-hosting with my dear friend and colleague, Dr. Jack Nessel, the founder of Nestle & Associates. Today, the ERP Organizational Change Journal, as always, seeks to share expertise, insight, and effective conversations to help guide ERP organizational change to real, measurable, and verified success, expanding what we can see so we can act in a more effective way to enable organizational transformation. We seek to promote, connect, and foster relationships in the ERP and organizational change community. The primary purpose of this podcast is to discuss, share, reflect upon effective and efficient ways in which to realize ERP organizational change success. We will discuss the people, process, and technology components of ERP organizational change. This podcast is intended as a forum to study, share, and discuss ERP organizational change. It's our sincerest hope that this is a collaboration tool and resource, and we hope that you will find this podcast useful as we share lessons learned, best practices, and explore the human elements of ERP organizational change. Our podcast draws on knowledge from extensive research, collaborative learning, and practitioner experience, both of project successes and failures. In the general review and theme of ERP and organizational change practice, literature, and research suggests that understanding and critically having an awareness of tactics founded in principle is fundamental to ERP organizational change success. Our podcast will discuss these tactics, approaches, and principles to provide you with a useful toolkit in addressing ERP organizational change challenges and risks.
Thank you, Jonathan. As we are a podcast that desires to engage in valuable insight into the world of ERP organizational change success with interviews, roundtable talk, our guests include experts and pioneers in the field, organizational stakeholders, practitioners, and researchers. This is a discussion on any and all things ERP and organizational change, and our podcast is a platform for those seeking to share, learn, and reflect on ERP organizational change. In this episode, Transformative Leader, we will discuss leadership growth and development with our guest, Ron J. West.
Before we invite Ron on, I just want to give a brief introduction. Mr. West's career and success as a genuine and passionate coach, business leader, keynote speaker, and mentor to many is just impressive. Mr. West's practice is based around the Chrysalis Vertical Leadership Development Program, which is based in vertical development principles. Ron's career as a leader in transformation spans two continents, you'll find out by his English accent, and more than 25 years, both as an accomplished business leader and an accredited executive coach. Ron has coached and advised leaders in Fortune 500 companies, growing mid-sized firms across many industries, including oil and gas, software, telecommunications, energy, construction, and commercial real estate. He's helped leaders of 7-Eleven, NASA, Samsung, Target, and other companies achieve amazing transformations within their organizations. This specific episode will further examine Ron's work, Corporate Caterpillars, How to Grow Wings. Today's conversation will touch on the nature of aligning organizations and being and how that impacts everything we do, and how we can harness that to unleash breakthrough results.
Ron, we are grateful and inspired to have you on our podcast. I can tell our listeners, I have seen firsthand your keynote speeches personally, and I will tell our listeners that you are genuine, passionate, authentic, and extremely knowledgeable. I think the important thing to recognize is that not only are you a thought leader, you were a practitioner, you are a practitioner, you lived in the trenches, and you've developed and practiced what you now teach. And that to me is pretty inspirational. So welcome to our podcast, and we appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much, gentlemen. I really, really do appreciate the opportunity to guest on your podcast. It means a great deal to me. Thank you.
And Ron, just to add too, as someone for whom I have great respect and as someone who has followed your work, I believe that your incredible success of your practice and the Chrysalis program that Jonathan has referred to in your transformation workshop is due to your belief in application of sound principles. And your practice and knowledge, it seems, is firmly rooted in the application on the latest thinking in adult development theory, also known as advanced or vertical leadership development.
And just for our listeners here, vertical development theory is a fascinating piece of work. It's one of my most favorite topics, but unfortunately, we can't do justice to the whole theory in this single podcast episode. But what we're going to try and do is we'll focus in on some of the key principles behind Mr. West's work that are based on a vertical development and include that in the conversation. So the outline of our conversation is we'll have an intro into some of the basis of Ron's work. We'll look and double-click on some of those key principles underpinned by vertical development theory. And then we'll look at how those principles inform tactics and practices that everyday practitioners can use to enable project success. And with that, Jack?
Yeah, so Ron, that being said, what do you say about practice in general in terms of what works and what doesn't work? So I guess to ask the question in a slightly different way, does practice based on sound principles and or research work, and why is that?
Great question. And the answer is yes, it does. But it's also evolving. I think knowledge for all of us humans is something that we're continually building. One of the difficulties I see, though, came up many years ago on an ERP project. We quickly forget that which we've already learned. Mm-hmm. So to me, having practice based on sound principles is really a way of carrying forward that which works and that we should know and understand. It's not necessarily anything to inhibit or interrupt our continued learning. Mm. So many years ago, I was working on an ERP project, and the guy that was heading the whole thing, a CIO at the time, had one very, very poor experience with a previous ERP rollout, and it was a lack of sponsorship. So as far as he was concerned, the only thing to fix to be mindful of, the only principle to be applied, was to make sure that we had sufficient sponsorship. And he neatly ignored everything else that had ever been learned about ERP projects and how to make sure they're successful. Fascinating, huh?
Fascinating, right? The ability to forget and to have a route to come back is so important. Ron, one of the most powerful principles that comes across in my reading of your work is this idea that personal transformation and development can help us and guide us in transforming our business and our companies. Can you speak on how you arrived at this insight and how this has guided you?
Again, a great deal of experience of doing things the wrong way probably would be a good starting point. The interesting thing to me is the more that you are open to learning something new and yet balanced with that which we already know, you can do a much more effective job, whatever it is, whether it's an ERP implementation or any kind of large change initiative. What prompted me, I think, first of all, was I truly believe, like many early in my career, that I had all the answers. Mm-hmm. There was no need to ask any questions because really I had all the answers. And if you just did what I said, everything would be fine. And it took me a long time to figure out and to actually come across coaching as a whole discipline and understand, coaching is much more about creating a safe space and asking questions so that other people build intrinsic motivation to solve their own problems. And that's a good way of just opening everybody up for learning. So if the coach, or let's say the leader of an ERP implementation, is open for change, then they themselves will promote more openness and learning in the part of others. Again, we don't want to lose that which we've learned already, so let's make sure it's based in sound principles. But as long as everyone is open to that learning, you can be much more agile, much more flexible, Use the best of what you know already, but not get stuck and think you have all the answers. I think great leaders are those that ask the great questions, myself.
Such a great point. Yeah. And so, Ron, maybe this summarizes your first two points, but you state in your book a quote that I really like. So I'm going to share that with our listeners. And that is, quote, "The third inspiration for the book comes from a realization that a business is a living, breathing, constantly changing entity made up of collective experiences, memories, hopes, and aspirations for the future, much like a person." And I think this is a great statement that, every organization is really so different. But I think that's just such a great quote. Any thoughts on that, or can you elaborate on what you meant by that statement?
Sure. And again, it occurred to me a long time ago that if you start treating a company as a complex human being, you have a deeper understanding of what you're dealing with. Because, there are some fundamental principles of, say, good communication with a human being. There are ways to build relationship. There are ways to get things accomplished.
Right.
And so we can put those down like as a foundation, right? That's a good starting point. But then we have to be open to the fact, too, that everyone's a little bit unique, and so is every company. So I think that the only danger to watch out for is that we don't simplify things to the point that we believe they're all the same,
right.
That we somehow stay flexible enough, masterful enough to, rely on proven principles for sure, and yet meet the company as we would a person, just meet them where they are and understand that every culture is a little different and has to be handled such. So it's that really, it's that perfect balance between really something proven principles and then but let's be curious about what we don't know going forward. And if you think about a whole company as being a human being, warts and all, bad days and all, it makes it much easier to make sense of an experience when you're trying to drive change at an organizational level, I think.
And I think, Ron, that's such a such a true idea, this idea that be aware of and conscious about what you don't know, right? Because a lot of times, just like humans, like you said, organizations are the same way. They know what they know. They know what they don't know, but sometimes they don't know what they don't know. And so, that same idea, that is certainly true of humans also applies to organizations.
Yeah, I think it's true. One of the exercises I give a lot of coaching clients is to drive their cars.
Mm.
It sounds rather silly, but the idea is if you drive very passively and you tend to stay in the slow lane, let everybody pass you, I encourage those people to drive just a little more assertively, certainly not dangerously. Mm-hmm. And anyone that tends to be, let's say, a fairly aggressive driver, I encourage them to slow down. Something interesting happens. Usually by the Wednesday of the same week, everybody hates me for the exercises. It's not that easy, actually. But by the weekend, instead of being largely an unconscious driver where, you've mastered the tactics and so you're really just about getting from A to B and you care about little else, what happens instead is people get so conscious of the whole driving experience, they begin to drive for and with everyone else. And begin to get into flow with the traffic and so see their role as not just getting from A to B, but making sure everybody gets there and that everybody gets there safely. Can't do that if you're doing everything in auto drive. Doesn't work. So I'm a great proponent of conscious leadership too. And that's the way to bring about large scale change and make these projects successful is be conscious about them.
Ron, I couldn't agree with you more. And this is a great segue and I think we're going to open now to exploring some of the principles behind some of the coaching practices like you just beautifully demonstrated here. We'll take a look at consciousness, awareness. One of the things I want to do for our listeners is to walk them into this space of being. And you talk about the concept in the book, and I'm quoting now. Here's the thing. the results you seek depend on what you're doing. Everything you do, in turn, depends on how you are being. This is as true for an individual as it is for a company. Can you speak more to this essence of be, do, have in organizations and individuals?
Yeah. It's very interesting how we go to the results. What is it we want to have? And we put all our energy there and then step back into what is it we have to do to get that done? And really not concerning ourselves with how we're being while we're doing all of this.
Yeah.
And yet, if you start the other way around, as counterintuitive as it first seems, you end up with a much more purpose-driven leader and a purpose-driven company. Like, how do you want to be in the world? You can't do confidence, for example. You can go into a room and do confidence. It's going to be a very long list of body language tips and hints and ways to control your voice, and pretty quickly it gets overwhelming, right? So one of the things I'll teach is if you're trying to be confident, think of somebody else that you know that is confident,
mm-hmm.
and just is being confident in everything they say and everything they do and the way they show up, basically. And what happens instead is that we as humans kind of see other people model this for us. And we kind of know. So I encourage people to think about going into a meeting and you want to show lots of confidence without arrogance. Think about someone that does it really well before you go into the meeting and take them with you. And so what's really remarkable about that is instead of worrying about what you've got to do or what you've got to say and getting caught up in, let's call them the weeds, you can actually remind yourself of this other person that you know or know of, and you can show up in a very, very confident way and be confident in the moment in everything you say and do without a great deal of work or rehearsal or practice. And so same for companies. I think it starts with how are you being in the world? And it ties you to a much deeper state of consciousness. It ties you to a much more purpose-driven life rather than worry about what you're doing. We'll figure out how to do things. There are many, many ways to solve the same problem. But how are you being while you're doing those things, I think, is really important.
Ron, the way you've opened up into this space and as someone who works in this space, it's very challenging to get people to understand that nature of being. The space around how do we be first, it sort of implies that mindsets are causative, and the way we show up, the way we be affects the things we do, and the things we do affect the things we have or the problems we're able to solve. What's the challenge with modeling that and getting leaders to model that in their organizations?
We're such reactive creatures though, right? So we spend all of our time just reacting from a fear base most of the time.
Yeah.
So all of our, let's call them very unfortunate negative responses, which are usually overuse of particular strengths. We dive into action. Give people a global pandemic and they will dive to action so they can sustain some level of control over their world and feel at least as though they're in control.
Yeah.
And they're busy doing instead of kicking back and saying, how am I being while all this is going on? But I have to say, it's pretty counterintuitive. It's tough for people to go, well, what do you mean be? I remember this insane exercise I did in a workshop. And they basically said, okay, so we want you to decide how you're going to be and then be that and see if everybody else can guess how you're being. But don't do anything. I have to say, my poor little doing brain, which has been conditioned over many years to just go into action, struggled. I sat down thinking about it for 20 minutes before I attempted to do anything. And I'm sure I cheated and started doing things anyway. I think it's super tough. It's super tough. And it takes time to get to that. It's like you can't do mindfulness.
Yeah. This is super powerful here. There's another section of this conversation that I want to dive into. You can't do mindfulness, but how do we open this box through words I keep hearing in our conversation so far, consciousness and awareness, and a theme that comes out in my reading of your book, getting real?
Yeah, real is interesting, right? Because we tend to see everything through the filters that we've been accumulating for some time. And what we're asking to do is to go past that and to ask the right questions, to rely upon data from other observers, real data that's measured some other way, to try and get a sense of, well, how much of this is real and how much of this is my perception. Mm-hmm. And perception can be madly distorted. So it's really trying to cut through that and get real about things. But what consciousness or awareness does, a bit like the driving exercise really, is, okay, now I can't simply be unconsciously confident. I can't have automatically learned these things and just be relying on the fact that something, some estimates say 90% of everything that we're doing is automatic response. Even our language patterns and the things that we say, many things that we do are completely unconscious. So what we're trying to do is to say, well, let's realize what we don't know. Let's become consciously incompetent, realize what we don't know well, and start thinking about that, make it more of a cognitive exercise. Let's get more tuned into our real surroundings, more observant of them. So we start showing levels of presence. Very difficult to show a level of presence, for example, if you're tired. So get rest. Very difficult to show a level of presence and be conscious about anything if we're not physically in a reasonable state, if we've let ourselves go, let's say. So again, got to take more care of ourselves, got to get the rest, absolutely. Got to have, you know, time to emotionally recover from things as well as psychologically, physically. And having time just in nature or whatever else it does that recharges us. All these things help us develop more consciousness. And what we're adding with awareness is some more data. Let's look at what really is around us. And instead of filtering everything by all these limiting beliefs we have, or patterns, or our approximation to the world, let's find out what's really going on. Let's not be afraid of asking the difficult question and get some real information about what's really going on. And facing that, basically dealing with that in a very conscious, intentional way. That makes sense?
No, that makes great sense. You know, I think, Ron, in your book and as well as in this conversation, you're describing this idea of being unconsciously incompetent. Or, you know, as we were talking earlier, it's kind of this idea of, you know, we don't know what we don't know. Isn't this idea alone, just understanding this idea, motivation enough for organizational leaders to desire, frankly, you know, programs like yours based in principle? You know, I think, you know, many leaders are held back by their own personal beliefs, as you've mentioned previously, that, you know, I think you'd mentioned you were there. I think I was there at one point, that these personal beliefs that they know all there is to learn. I mean, that's certainly a limiting belief, right? I mean, that's a major obstacle to growth and improvement, whether as an individual or an organization.
But remember that humans are very good at defending themselves too. And so when we get good at something and we become successful, we get attached to it. Why would we try something that feels a lot more risky, that even provokes fear in us? Why would we speak up when we really feel like the way to play it safe is to stay quiet? So what we're really talking about here is helping people understand, and this is the point about getting real, really helping people understand that, hey, if you think you know everything, That's a problem. It's better to say, I know a lot. I've established some good principles that work for me, and I can apply them. That's sound. And there are things I don't yet know, or there are things that I've learned that may need revisiting, let's say.
Sure.
And I may need some new data to update that thinking. Well, that's counterintuitive. And that's why I think it's crucial, whether it's a leadership development program like the Chrysalis program or its individual coaching, you still must first create psychological safety. Nobody will expose themselves unless they feel it's safe.
Right.
So the key thing, and this is key for any project, especially an ERP implementation, there must be a safe space where it's okay to talk about the things you're worried about, the things that aren't going so well, the things that may need correction, the difficulties, the challenges you're facing. And if that safe space is not first created, then you're not going to get a real story. You're not going to find out what's going on, and people will not be open to learning. They will not become consciously incompetent and try something new and different in a conscious, competent way because it's not safe. So we'll all be living from our limiting beliefs and our memory. That's the challenge we're trying to get over.
Mm. Ron, I want to highlight a couple things for our listeners because I'm so enthralled with this conversation. The real step and counterintuitiveness here is that in order to get real, we need to do the things that we don't yet want to do or don't see the need to do, whether that was creating the safe space, asking questions, being willing to recognize what we don't know. And in your book, you mentioned there's a couple of key ways that individuals and organizations, particularly leaders, wake up to this moment of awareness. You referenced the driving exercise. Responsibility is a core ability. You also mention force, frustration, and inspiration, and that two of these three are really reactively based. Can you speak to the process of waking up and developing that awareness and its core objective?
Yeah, I think there are probably some that would say that once you've achieved a level of awareness, you can't take that away again. I've personally seen folks go back to sleep again after having some awareness for a while. I think it's a bit of a touchstone, honestly. I think it is possible with enough of the right safety first, right? Create the psychological safety and then the right level of data and information so you start getting information that you can handle. And that takes somebody helping meet you where you are and then helping you see things in a slightly different way. If that's all established, then it's going to be far easier for you to get and stay aware for a while. And that's a precursor to any kind of growth and development, at least in the world of leadership development. What we're talking about with some of these other things, and you can think about them as one individual or an entire culture in an organization.
Sure.
Is there are different ways to get things done. And one of the principles of vertical development, just to touch on that briefly, is just really meeting people where they are, not making assumptions, but truly creating a safe space around their worldview and not making judgment about it, but just really meeting them where they are and moving from there. And the other one is just if you're trying to move somebody forward, let them be the ones that set the pace. Let them be the ones that try to figure out what's next, how to move this forward. Now, at an organizational level, you can cheat and you can create conditions where if you're going to survive as an organization post-COVID-19, you're going to need to pivot, and you can force the change that way.
Mm-hmm.
I've been speaking to an organization today, and in fact, they read to me a long letter of complaint from a longstanding employee. And it's clear this organization has developed a level of frustration about problems and challenges and stuckedness, we'll call it, that has just reached boiling point. And it's gone up to the new leadership, and they're looking at this going, well, this cannot be. This has to be addressed. And that level of frustration can force change too. Well, if you think about it, all of those things can apply to an individual human as much as it does to a whole organization.
Sure.
They're just different ways of promoting, if you like, a reason to get aware. And that's the key thing about vertical development, not just meet people where they are, but then create conditions under which there's some heat. And the mm-hmm. heat is the pressure to make sense of the world in a different way. So a global pandemic has an interesting way of really challenging people, saying, well, you know, it's not just what you're doing that's going to be different going forward. That's a given now. But we need to be different. The much more fundamental shift and change is coming in the way we do leadership because the world today is way more complex, even chaotic, than it used to be, right? Even a few short years ago. And the only way to cope with that is to evolve the kind of leadership we have. And the only way to do that is to have people develop as adults. And the only way to do that is meet people where they are and create the conditions, the safe conditions, where there's some growth. And we as a populace, we need that. We need strong leadership that can help move forward and challenge some of these, or deal with some of these gigantic challenges we have across the world today.
I want to pause just for a minute here, because this is such a powerful sentiment. Two of the key things from vertical development are meeting people where they are, and this meeting things where they are without judgment. It just is. And, I want to just pause and add in here, what does it take for organizations to both develop or to have leaders vertically in their organizations when their cultures may not be prepared for it? How many executives do you know that don't take the time to focus on being or those practices? And when the culture is reinforced in that way, what's the way you approach that from creating consciousness and awareness?
It's a big challenge, right? You're dealing with organizations where there are some people within the organization whose level of adult development is much further along than the culture of the company. So what I tend to measure as well is I'll measure, where is this company at? I might give you an example. A specific example might help.
Please.
There's lots of different models out there, right? So I just use this one. But there's a level where, let's say, your early career, you get to a stage where you develop expertise in what you do, become an expert. And the next stage from there, in adult development terms, according to almost all the models, is a level of driving things, goals, towards goals and leading people and getting things done, which takes more than one individual, going beyond just individual expertise, but having the abilities as an adult to align people around some end goal, some bigger outcome. That's a big step change, right?
This is often the achiever, right, for listeners who are sort of aware of these bucket terms.
Exactly. So making that big shift is one of the biggest ones a lot of people go through in their career. And if in an organization you look at the entire culture, I was working with one last year that had an entire culture of experts and stuck in experts, and the world is very black and white for them. And for them to move forward, the entire organization needs to move to something where they've got more shared goals, they achieve things with others, and that's the shift they're going through. But in answer to your question, you end up with people that are much more advanced levels and don't feel like they fit anymore. In fact, a lot of them either self-select out or quietly just, stay where they are. They do their job, but really they're thinking about the world, making sense of the world in a completely different way. All you can really do in vertical development is create the conditions under which there is growth. But super important this, some positions, some responsibilities are better suited to wherever they are. I mean, hardly want somebody fixing something in your home that was not just very settled in expert. That would be a problem. So there are certain stages of adult development well suited to certain roles. Got to be mindful of that too. So what we're talking about here is just leadership. And you will always have a spread. But I'll say this, the more advanced you go in terms of adult development, the easier it is for you to access all the other stages of development. You become much more inclusive, much more flexible, and seemingly much wiser the further along the development journey you go. So why not continue to grow? Well, because it's hard work, it's uncomfortable work, and it is work, and nobody else can do your push-ups for you.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, as much as 97% of the population gets stuck at an earlier stage of development and don't go any further. So the best we can do is create the conditions where there can be maximum growth, give people that opportunity, and those that seize it will help us move forward.
Fascinating. I wanna switch back, and Jack, I think we were looking around the value of setting vision and principles. I'd like to invite you on that and to see how that lands from a vertical perspective as well for Ron.
Sure. Yeah, Ron, in your book, you discuss the idea and the value and importance of, you know, setting and sharing and communicating the vision and the principles and the goals of the organization. And as simple as an idea as that seems, I know from our experience, you know, we go into organizations frequently and we see where, you know, there's a significant gap there. So why in your book do you discuss that? Why do you feel it's so important? And really a three-part question, what's your thoughts on the areas that the leaders tend to attend to the least in that sense? So why do you think that's so important? And what do you see as kind of the driver behind lack of creating that vision and goals within organizations?
And I'll say this too, just for clarification. I don't mean the kind of mission, vision, values that we do in an offsite retreat, turn into a pretty poster and nail on the wall and then never refer to again. Well, we're not right. talking about those. Those have less than any value. It's a negative effect on everybody else. Everybody groans when those things come back from the offsite meeting. So my own belief is they're important for a different reason. The output, the actual poster itself, is of little importance, if any. It is the conversation that led to an understanding of why are we here? What are we trying to achieve? Like, why are we? And that gets back to the point you made earlier about being. Like, why are we here? Like, what's the whole reason for being? And who are we going to be? Like, when we show up in the world, what difference are we making? Mm-hmm. And if you can't justify that to yourselves and each other and make that stick, maybe you shouldn't be doing what you're doing. Maybe you should mm-hmm. be doing something else. So that's the first thing. And it's important because it gives everybody else some deeper reason to do what they do. And no, it's no longer just a job. It's this ties to my own values and this ties to my own purpose in this way. That's really important for people to feel some connection to something worthwhile. It's really interesting.
Fascinating.
The best ERP projects I've ever seen are the ones where people feel that they somehow have a higher level connection to it. Like, we're doing this not just to be more efficient or save some dollars. We're doing this for deeper reasons, because we as a company will have greater impact in the world if we can do this and get ourselves organized in this way. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different mindset. Now, that's why it's important, I think. The interesting thing that I found when people start getting into those conversations is they don't really have a really good why. They haven't really thought through their strategy. They don't understand what it is that their clients really love about them, that they bring, the difference that they make in the world. And they really don't understand why their employees love coming to work, or they don't at all. And what it gives you is a vehicle to address all of that, to get everybody essentially on the same page. Like, this is why we're here. This is why the stuff that we do is important. This is the difference we're trying to make. This is why we care about this. And where it goes horribly wrong is you just turn it into a poster. It's just dismissed as something that senior management went off-site to do, instead of a conversation that really should engage everybody in the organization if it's done right.
Interesting. Yeah. So I think what you're saying is it goes way beyond satisfying a checklist or a piece of paper on someone's wall. You know, what you're really referring to is that really, that true organizational culture piece of living up to and really understanding, you know, who you are and what you're all about, and having those productive conversations that at the end of the day, they support, you know, that piece of paper on the wall, but that's not the important piece, right? That's not the important thing to accomplish. It's really understanding, who we are, you know, who are we, what's our purpose, how do we get better? So it's that exercise of doing, you know, checking off that box, but doing it with intent and being very deliberate about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to switch gears a little bit here, and now we're going to take those principles we've talked about and help our listeners, often who are practitioners and leaders, make use of this in a daily way. So one of the challenges for organizations when they're in a big change is that those moments of awareness are so fleeting, and they're dependent on those exterior factors, external factors that you spoke about. You know, and if one of the critical success factors, as you mentioned, is to find a way to sustain our awareness so it's continually renewing, a way to stay responsible, can you speak a little bit more about this and how our practitioners, leaders can show up and be and do and have this in their daily lives?
Yeah, you kind of answered the question yourself in a way, because my own view is that it's, first of all, a bit like meditation. And the first time people usually try meditation, doesn't work so well. They get easily distracted. And what they realize is, oh, it's a bit of a muscle, actually, that if I can just stay still for a couple of minutes, I'll get used to the idea, and progressively that will get longer. And I'll start getting attached. I'll stop getting attached to thoughts that come up. I'll be able to just let them go. And progressively, they get better and better and better at meditating. Well, that's the same with awareness. It's another muscle. But one of the ways, if you're looking to create and sustain awareness, is as a leader, you can model it for everybody else. Mm. If you're aware, you're asking the right questions, right? Then you're encouraging everyone else to think and be conscious and be connected. And then the rest is a good and healthy diet of data. That's good, hard data that's saying, here's where we're at. Here's what's going on. Okay, what are we missing? What else is going on? And being open to that instead of reacting to it. The first boss that reacts to a piece of news that I don't necessarily want, and they show through their face getting red or gritting their teeth or even some strong words, yeah, that this is not welcome, that's the last piece of truth you're going to hear as a leader. You won't get any more. You just cut that off. You've basically shown everybody that you can't handle it anyway, so you're not right. Going to hear the truth anymore. There's no more getting real for you.
Right.
What does that prevent in organizations when they can't get real for change?
Welcome to most of our organizations, right, Jonathan? The interesting thing is, so that's going on at different levels all the time. Usually yeah. Through inexperience, people are reacting to things and they're dampening down the reality because they can't handle it anyway yet. And then as you go through, if people are becoming more and more mature and they're developing as adults, they're able to cope with more reality showing up without having a small meltdown. But what it costs in terms of the company is if the truth is not being relayed, right, then we're playing Chinese whispers. And how many times have we got one situation really going on, anybody that's in the front line really doing hard work, and then somebody 3, 4, 6 stages away, 6 skip levels away, making decisions based on a complete misrepresentation of what's actually going on. So sad. But welcome to the world of work. But let's just say we have some more work to do in that area, right?
So, Ron, thank you again. I mean, this conversation is your insight is profound and just incredible. For our listeners, if you had to summarize effective organizational leadership in 2 sentences or less, what would that be?
It's a journey, and nobody can do your push-ups for you. And with the state of the world we're in right now, better, more mature, more advanced leadership is very desperately needed. So stick with the journey. Excellent. I think that was 2 sentences. It was kind of long.
That was perfect.
They certainly resonated for me. The push-ups example is so true. I want to continue this and ask you, for all the ERP and change practitioners, and as you've easily seen, there's so much change going on in our organizations today, and all the principles you have from vertical development, if there was one single principle from which to help them orient themselves towards this space of awareness, getting real, to be able to create meaningful results, what would that principle be? And how would you express it?
I think it's around a principle of meeting people where they are. Let me explain just very briefly. So if people don't first feel validated for the way they're thinking and feeling, especially, they'll never change their mind. So
sure.
Meeting people where they are, sort of understanding their worldview, being respectful of that, not resisting it, not judging it, but creating a safe space around it, saying, I have no judgment about you, I'm meeting you where you are. It's much easier to get people aligned to a common purpose of, say, an ERP implementation. But it's really about meet people where they are, not where you think they should be, not with the mindset you wish they had, or even with the viewpoints of ones you wish they had. Just genuinely go meet them where they are and work from that place. And I think that once people feel heard, truly heard, it's much easier to get them to align to something that's really meaningful, that has a higher order meaning. There's a purpose to what we're doing. But meet people where they are first. I would say that's probably, for me, the number one principle. Mm-hmm.
Ron, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate your work and your insight. And for our listeners, please check out ronjwest.com for more information. And we recommend for anyone serious about effective leadership that Corporate Caterpillar's How to Grow Wings should be in your library. But feel free to reach out to Ron with any questions. Ron, thank you again, and be well, my friend. We really appreciate your time today.
Likewise. Stay safe, guys, and thank you again for the opportunity. I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Ron, such a pleasure to have you on and to see and experience your insight. So thank you again. We are incredibly excited and grateful to have friends, colleagues, and mentors join us on our podcast. We have an incredible lineup of guests, including ERP, organizational change speakers, authors, professors, researchers, pioneers in the field, practitioners, PE partners, business executives, ERP vendors, and organizational stakeholders. Please join us for our next episode with Dr. Dan Dennison to discuss organizational culture. Dr. Dennison is the chairman and founding partner of Dennison Consulting, professor of management and organization, and pioneer in the field of organizational culture. We look forward to having you listen and join us on the next ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast. I'm Jonathan Donald, and we are the ERP Organizational Change Journal podcast, wishing you stay well and see you next time.